Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President Obama was both celebratory and hedged this week as he spoke about the Paris Climate Change Agreement.
Even if all the initial targets set in Paris are met, we'll only be part of the way there when it comes to reducing carbon from the atmosphere. So we cannot be complacent because of today's agreement. The problem's not solved because of this accord. But make no mistake, the Paris Agreement establishes the enduring framework the world needs to solve the climate crisis.
Well, let's wrap up our coverage of the Paris climate talks with the person that helped us kick off the coverage, Boston University Professor Adil Najm. He's dean of BU's School of Global Studies. He was in Paris for the beginning of the talks, and he joins us now in the studio. Dean Najm, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So when we talked to you at the beginning of the Paris Climate Change Summit, you actually told us you were a cynic about the possibilities coming out of Paris. Does your cynicism endure today?
I hope I wasn't a cynic, but certainly a skeptic. I think the quote from President Obama is exactly right. I'm very happy we have an agreement, and I think we are better off by having an agreement. But the problem is not solved for people like me who've been at it for a quarter century. There is a long, long, long road ahead of us.
Okay, so before we talk about just the peculiarities of that road, what do you think are the strongest parts of the accord?
That there is an agreement. The biggest achievement was that countries agreed to agree. That is not cynical at all, because remember in 2009, the world had gotten together at Copenhagen and the train had come off the rails.
That's right. There was no agreement to even agree.
There was no agreement. There was Great Depression. We were sort of, you know, really, it was off the rails. The momentum had been lost. And I think the biggest achievement is that the train has been put back on the rails. There is momentum. There is enthusiasm. There is actual happiness. In the agreement, there really isn't anything that is substantively grounded in real targets, but the fact that the countries agreed to do something themselves is a step forward.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that, because the Paris Climate Agreement does say that countries agreed to, quote, hold the increase in global average temperature to well below 2 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial levels, and to pursue efforts to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees. Pursue efforts doesn't sound necessarily like the strongest binding language I've ever heard.
Oh, in English, what that means is we'll try, but don't hold us to it. Not even the two degree. So it's aspirational. They are saying we aspire to do something. We are already nearly 1 degree over pre-industrial. So the ability to make 1.5 sounds very, very, very dicey. And there's nothing in the agreement that holds anyone to doing anything.
But the difference between 1.5 and 2 is like entire countries, right? There are nations
Oh, yeah.
Who are so vulnerable.
Oh, yeah. First of all, this is degree centigrade.
Right.
And in the slipping through the cracks between 1.5 and 2 is about 300 million people's lives and livelihoods. And entire security and survival of some small island states. So for the most vulnerable countries, it's a big difference. But the fact that at least 1.5 is in, they think they have now nudging room to push forward. But there's nothing in the agreement that any country has said that gives you hope that they will actually make it.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that, because now it goes from the conference rooms of Paris to the individual signing nations. And there's nothing in the agreement that I see that you know, it doesn't prescribe anything in particular for nations to do. It's up to them to reach their targets, right?
Yes, the targets that they volunteered themselves.
Yeah.
There is nothing binding in the agreement. So the whole agreement does not use the word pledge, does not use the word commitment. At the last minute, there was this big fiasco with the U.S. insisting and winning out on removing the word shall and replacing it with should, because shall means that you will do it, and should means you'll try to do it. So that might sound cynical, but it's not. The point is that the U.S. did not want to take this into ratification. So there's nothing in the agreement that's binding.
But does that not leave, let's focus on the United States. Does that not leave even the spirit of the agreement threatened because of, corporate, political, what have you, influences in each nation that could sort of subvert the overall goals of the agreement. Sure. I mean, we're already seeing that in the United States.
Sure, sure. And we haven't met prior targets. So remember, these negotiations have gone on for 25 years. We have missed every previous target we've ever set. So there is a lot to be skeptical about. There is also the fact that President Obama, who I really honestly think has put his own legitimacy on the line, as has Senator Kerry Secretary Kerry, they're not going to be in office after a few months, right? Or at least President Obama is not. And therefore, it will depend on whoever the new person is and whether they have the same commitment or not. So essentially, what you have is good intention, and good intention is only going to depend on the goodwill of whoever is going to be in power, not just in the U.S., but in China, in France, in the U.K., because essentially, it is an agreement of goodwill.
Well, we're seeing Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky saying in a statement about the climate agreement this weekend that President Obama, quote, is making promises he can't keep, and that the agreement is, quote, subject to being shredded in 13 months when we have a new president.
That may well be so. President Obama, I think, is trying to say, I'm not making any promises anyhow. So what he's banking on, and I'm rooting that he's right, but it's going to be a tough sell, is that technology will take over, that business will see sort of, you know, that the magic is going to happen not through the government, but because of this goodwill, because of technology, because of low oil prices. That's going to be a big factor in this. Mm-hmm. We are going to see the technological change and the public mood change.
Right.
That is going to keep it from sinking.
Right. Well, you know, we're seeing the oil prices at what, $35-ish dollars a barrel now, almost an unimaginable number. But finally, in the last couple seconds that we have, I understand that nations also agreed to submit new plans to limit emissions every 5 years. So they have to give plans every 5 years. How important is that?
I think, frankly, that's the most important part. Right. Given that the agreement itself is aspirational, the fact that they have to come back and say, okay, this is how we did on our aspiration. This is what we intend to do next. At least gives the world a shaming device. It gives the activist room to push them. And a lot is really going to depend not on countries, but on people, on activists, on organizations.
Well, Adil Najm is Dean of Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies. He went to the Paris Climate Talks 2 weeks ago as part of the delegation from Pakistan, and he joins us today to help us wrap up our Paris coverage. Dean Najm, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And I should mention, by the way, that all our excellent coverage on the Paris Climate Accords was largely produced by Caitlin O'Keefe and Virginia Marshall, two of our crack team of producers here at Radio Boston. There's more of the show coming up in just a couple of minutes. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.